Stories of Robin Hood, Bertha E. Bush. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Stories of Robin Hood. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: Stories of Robin Hood, author Bertha E. Bush. Release date: July 4, 2014, ebook 46190. Most recently updated: October 24, 2024. Language: English, other information and formats. www.gutenberg.org/ebook/46190. Credits: produced by David Edwards, Demian Katz, and the online distributed proofreading team at http://www.pgdp.net. Images, courtesy of the Digital Library at Villanova University. http://digitallibrary.villanova.edu/*start-of-the-project-gutenberg-ebook-stories-of-robin-hood*. Instructor Literature Series Number 212, The Story of Robin Hood by Bertha E. Bush, published jointly by F. A. Owen Pub. Co. DANSVLLENY Hall & McCreary, Chicago, IL. Instructor Literature Series Stories of Robin Hood by Bertha E. Bush, published jointly by F. A. Owen Pub. Co. DANSVLLENY Hall & McCreary, Chicago, IL. Copyright 1912 by F. A. Owen Publishing Co. Robin Hood Contents, Winning the Sheriff's Golden Arrow, How Little John Joined Robin Hood, Allan A Dale and Friar Tuck, Robin Hood and the Sorrowful Knight, Robin Hood and the King, Death of Robin Hood and Allan A Dale, Instructor Literature Series, Excelsior Literature Series Stories of Robin Hood, and What of Peter the Plowman? He was a good friend of mine. Alack, Peter the Plowman hath been hanged, and his wife and little ones turned out of their home to beg. The father of young Robin Hood with his little son, at his side, had met a man from his old home and was eagerly questioning him about the welfare of his old neighbors. But much of the news was sad, for the times were evil in England. The Normans had conquered the country and were the lords and officials in the land, and they cruelly oppressed the common people. Who were Saxons? The father said not a word, although his face grew very sad, but the boy beside him burst out indignantly. But why should such a thing be done? Peter the Plowman was one of the best men I ever knew, and his wife was as good and kind as an angel. Why should such a dreadful thing be done to them? Because he shot deer in the king's forest. But indeed he had an excuse for breaking the law if ever a man did. His crops had been destroyed by the huntsmen riding through them. The tax collector had taken all that he had, and his children were crying for hunger. He shot the deer that they might have food to eat, but the sheriff caught him and hung him for it. As to the reason why his wife was turned out from her home with her orphan children, the abbot wanted that bit of ground for an extension to his garden, so out the poor folks must go. "It's a shame," cried the boy with flashing eyes. "Such laws as that are wicked laws and ought to be broken. The greedy lords and rich, ease-loving churchmen strip the people bare and go rolling in wealth, while the rest of the people are starving." "Hush, boy, hush," said the news teller warningly. "Our England is indeed cruelly misgoverned, but it is not safe to say so, for the very walls have ears, and many have been hanged because their tongues wagged too freely, as well as for shooting the king's deer." "But the king is good," faltered the boy. He had been taught to love and reverence the king. "King would be a good king if he would stay at home and govern his people. But he is off at war all the time, and the nobles and officers he appoints grind the people as a miller grinds the wheat between his great millstones. They rob them continually, and the rich are growing richer and more greedy, and the poor growing poorer and more miserable all the time." "When I am a man," said the boy, Robin Hood, "I will make the rich give up a portion of their wealth to the poor, and then all will be provided for." It was not strange, perhaps, considering the evils of the times, that this boy, Robin Hood, when he became a man, did do just what he said and gathered a band of men about him in the forest whose pledged purpose was to despoil the rich of ill-gotten wealth and lend a helping hand to the poor. The Normans called them highway robbers, but the common people called them the merry men of Greenwood and loved them, for they were often helped out of trouble by them. Their robbing was certainly wrong according to our standards, but Robin Hood did not think it was wrong. He took from the rich what they had wrung unjustly, from the poor to give it back to the poor, and he thought that it was right. Outlaw though he was, he stood ever for justice and fairness as he saw it. He was loyal to the king, though he resisted the unjust exactions made in the king's name. He was loyal to the church and prayed most reverently for himself and his band. It was his pride that he and his men had. Never harmed a woman or burned a haystack or robbed a husbandman or hurt a parish priest. The Normans did all these things. Compared with their actions, Robin Hood's standards were wonderfully high. He was trying to be a reformer, and though he went about his work in a wrong way, still he did much good. As the quaint old ballad says about him in queer spelling, which I revise, Christ have mercy on his soul, that died on the rood, for he was a good outlaw, and did poor men much good. He was brave and kind and merry always and all. The English people, except England's oppressors, loved him with all their hearts and delighted in his adventures. The story of what he did was put into songs and sung at every fireside, and no man was better loved than this outlaw with a price upon his head. Here are a few stories of Robin Hood and his men, and a great many more may be found which are well worth your reading. Winning the Sheriff's Golden Arrow, it was very pleasant in Sherwood Forest to those who did not fear hardship, and Robin Hood and his men came to love every tree that grew and every bird that sang there. They did not mind that they had no houses to live in. They made themselves shelters of bark and logs to keep the rain off, and mostly they stayed in the open. They did not sigh for soft beds or fine tables and furnishings. They put down rushes and spread deer skins over them to lie on and slept under the stars. They cooked over a great fire built beside a big tree, and they sat and ate on the ground. More than 100 men were in Robin Hood's band. Everyone was devoted to him and obeyed his slightest word. They were the best archers, the best wrestlers, the best runners, and the best wielders of cudgel and quarterstaff in all the country, and they grew better continually, for they practiced these things every day. Robin Hood was the best archer in all the land. Even the king had heard of his wonderful marksmanship. And even though he knew him an outlaw, he had an admiring and almost kindly feeling for this bold outlaw who shot so marvelously well. But the greedy lords and churchmen who oppressed the people hated Robin Hood, and the Sheriff of Nottingham hated him most of all, and wished above all things to hang him on the gallows. He was a cruel, hard man with no kindness in his bosom, and all his spite was turned against Robin Hood, because every time that he tried to catch him, Robin outwitted him. Now he was especially angered, for he had sent a messenger with a warrant to take Robin Hood, and the merry Robin had met the messenger and feasted him, and then, while he was asleep, after the feast, stolen the very warrant out of his pocket, so that he had to go back to the sheriff without man or warrant either. So the Sheriff of Nottingham used all his wits to get another plan to take Robin Hood. It was plainly of no use to send men, no matter how stout, with warrants after him. He must be coaxed into their clutches. "I have it," said the Sheriff of Nottingham at last, with a very sour look on his grim face. "I'll catch him by craft. I'll proclaim a great archery festival, and get all the best archers in England to come here to shoot. I'll offer for the prize an arrow of beaten gold. That will be sure to fetch Robin Hood and his men here, and then I'll catch them and hang them." Now Robin Hood and his men did come to the archery contest, but they did not come in the suits of Lincoln green that they wore as men of the forest. Each man dressed himself up to seem somebody else. Some appeared as barefoot friars, some as traveling tinkers or tradesmen, some as beggars, and some as rustic peasants. Robin Hood was the hardest to recognize of all. "Don't go, master," his men had begged. "This archery contest is just a trap to catch you. The Sheriff of Nottingham and his men will be looking for you, and they will know you by your hair and eyes and face and height, even if you wear different clothes. The Sheriff has made this festival just to lure you to death. Don't go." But Robin Hood laughed merrily. "Why, as to my yellow hair, I can stain that with walnut stain. As to my eyes, I can cover one of them with a patch, and then my face will not be recognized. I would scorn to be afraid, and if an adventure is somewhat dangerous, I like it all the better." So Robin Hood went, clad from top to toe in tattered scarlet, the raggedest beggarman that had ever been seen in Nottingham. The field where the contest was to be held was a splendid sight. Rows and rows of benches had been built on it for the gentlefolk to sit on, and they wore their best clothes and were gayer than birds of paradise. As for the Sheriff and his wife, they wore velvet, the Sheriff purple and his lady blue. Their rich garments were trimmed with ermine. They wore broad gold chains around their necks, and the Sheriff had shoes with wondrously pointed toes that were fastened to his gold-embroidered garters by golden chains. Oh, they were dressed very splendidly, and if their faces had been kind, they would have looked beautiful. but their faces were full of pride and hate. The sheriff was looking everywhere with spiteful glances for Robin Hood, and very cross he was that he did not see Robin there, but Robin was there, though the sheriff did not see him. There he stood in his ragged beggar's garments, not 10 feet away from the sheriff. The targets were placed 80 yards from where the archers were to stand. Pace that off and see. What a great distance it is. There were a great number of archers to shoot, and each was to have one shot. Then the 10 who shot best were to shoot 2 arrows each, and the 3 who shot best out of the 10 were to shoot 3 arrows apiece. The one who came nearest to the center of the target was to get a prize. The sheriff looked gloweringly at the 10. "I was sure that Robin Hood would be among them," he said to the man-at-arms at his side. "Could no one of these 10 be Robin Hood in disguise?" "No," answered the man-at-arms. "6 of these I know well. They are the best archers in England. There is Gil O' the Red Cap, Dickon Cruickshank, Adam O' the Dell, William O' Leslie, Hubert O' Cloud, and Swithin O' Hertford. Of the 4 beside, 1 is too tall and 1 too short and 1 not broad-shouldered, enough to be Robin Hood. There remains only this ragged beggar, and his hair and beard are much too dark to be Robin Hood's, and beside, he is blind in one eye. Robin Hood is safe in Sherwood Forest." Even as he spoke, the man-at-arms was glad, for he was but a common soldier, and he loved Robin Hood and wished no harm to come to him. One reason why Robin Hood got away from the sheriff so many times was that the common people, even among the sheriff's own men, were friendly to him and helped him all they could. The gatekeepers shut their eyes when Robin Hood went through the gates, that they might say they had not seen him enter. Hardly anyone would betray him, and many, when they knew of evil being planned against him, sent warning to him. But even the man-at-arms who loved him did not recognize Robin Hood today. The 10 made wonderful shots. Not one arrow failed to come within the circles that surrounded the center. But when the 3 shot, it was more wonderful still. Gil O' the Red Cap's first arrow struck only a finger's breadth from the center, and his second was nearer still. But the beggar's arrow struck in the very center. Adam O' the Dell, who had one more shot, unstrung his bow when he saw it. "For 4 years and more have I shot shaft and beat many competitors, but I can never better that," he said. The prize of the golden arrow belonged to the tattered beggar, but the sheriff's face was very sour as he gave it to him. He tried to induce him to enter his service, promising great wages. "You are the best archer I have ever seen," he said. "I trow you shoot even better than that rascal and coward of a Robin Hood who dared not show his face here today. Will you join my service?" "No, I will not," answered the scarlet-clad stranger, and then the sheriff looked at him so spitefully that he knew it was well to get away. As he walked toward Sherwood Forest, the sheriff's words rankled. "I cannot bear to have even my enemy think that I am a coward," he said to Little John. I wish there was a way to tell the sheriff that it was Robin Hood that won his golden arrow, and they found a way. That evening the sheriff sat at supper, and though the supper was a fine one, his face was gloomy. "I thought I could catch that rascal Robin Hood by means of this archery contest," he said to his wife, "but he was too much of a coward to show his face here." Just then something came through the window and fell rattling among the dishes on the table. It was a blunted gray goose quill with a bit of writing tied to it. The sheriff unfolded the writing. It told that it was Robin Hood who had won the golden arrow. When the sheriff read it, even his wife thought best to slip away, for he was the crossest man in Nottingham. How Little John Joined Robin Hood. This is the story of how Robin gained his right hand man and dearest friend, Little John. Little John was one of the tallest and strongest youths that ever walked through a forest. When Robin Hood first saw him, he was walking in the edge of the forest and came to a narrow bridge across a stream. The bridge was so narrow that but one could go across it at once, and it chanced that Robin Hood stepped upon it from one side, just as Little John stepped on the other end. "Go back and let the better man cross before you," called Robin Hood, not because he cared a bit, but rather with a mirthful wish to see what the tall youth would do. "Stand back yourself." "I am the better man," cried the stranger. "Let us fight for it," said Robin Hood, who loved a good bout more than his dinner. "With all my heart," answered the stranger. Then Robin cut him a stick of oak to serve as a quarterstaff, for he would have held it a shame to use his bow and arrows when the other had no such weapon, and they met as joyously as two boys wrestling for sport. "The one who can knock the other into the water is the better man," said Robin. Then the fight with the staves began. What a fight it was! They struck again and again, but so skillful was each one in warding off blows that neither could knock the other down. Many hard blows each one took, until there were sore bones and bumps and black and blue spots in plenty, but neither thought of stopping for that. A hole hour they fought there on the bridge, and neither could get the better of the other than another hour. At last Robin gave the stranger a terrible whack that made him stagger, but the stranger returned with a crack on the crown that made the blood flow. Robin whacked back at him savagely, but the stranger avoided the blow and gave one to Robin that tumbled him fairly into the water. He lay there looking up and laughing, for Robin Hood never bore any malice. "You have a right sturdy hand with the cudgel. Never have I been beaten before," he laughed. He splashed ashore and seized the stranger's hand. "I like you well," he said. "Now watch, and I will show you something." He put his horn to his lips and blew, and up came 20 of Robin Hood's followers, all clothed in Lincoln green and bearing bows and arrows and swords. "How is this, master?" said the foremost. "You are all bruised and wet to the skin." "Yon sturdy fellow has given me a drubbing and tumbled me into the water," he said. "Then he shall get a ducking and a drubbing himself," said Will Stutely, starting forth angrily, followed by half a dozen, all eager to carry out his threat, but Robin Hood ordered him back. "No," he said, "it was a fair fight, and he won. I would not have you hurt him for anything, but he is a right brave and lusty youth, and I would fain have him in our band. Will you join yourself to my men?" he asked of the wondering stranger. "I am Robin Hood, and my band is the finest in all England." Hardly a man in the country but would have trembled at the name. But John Little, the strange youth, was afraid of no man. "If there is any man among you who can shoot a better shaft than I will," he said. "Well, I will try," said Robin. He sent Will Stutely to set up a piece of white bark 4 fingers in, breadth on an oak 80 yards away. "Now choose any of our bows and arrows to shoot with," he said. The stranger chose the very stoutest bow. Then he aimed his arrow carefully and sent it down the path, and it struck the very center of the mark. All Robin Hood's followers caught their breaths in amaze. "That is a fine shot indeed," said Robin Hood heartily. "No one could better it, but perhaps I may mar it." Then he shot an arrow, and so true and swift it sped that it struck the stranger's arrow and splintered it into pieces. And all who saw it cried out that there never was such shooting before. "Now, will you not come into my band?" said Robin Hood with a smile. "With all my heart," answered the stranger, and from that minute he loved Robin as his dearest friend. "What is your name?" said Will Stutely, taking out a tablet as though he would enroll it. "John Little," answered the stranger youth. "I like not the name," said merry Will. "This fellow is too small to be called John Little. Let us christen him over Little John." And so they had a christening and great sport, and from that day Little John was Robin's right-hand man and second in command over the band. True and faithfully did he serve Robin for many years, and loved him better with every year, Allan a Dale and Friar Tuck. This is the story of a merry friar and how he came to belong to Robin Hood's band. But it begins with the story of a sad youth with a harp in his hand who could sing as sweetly as a thrush, but who thought that he would never sing again, for his heart was breaking. Robin Hood and his men found him in the forest, lying prone on the ground and sobbing as if he would weep his eyes out. "Get up, get up," shouted Will Stutely, poking him with his foot. "I do hate to see a tall young fellow sniveling like a girl of 14 over a dead bird." But Robin Hood bade the others stand back and touched the boy kindly. "You are in trouble," he said. "Do not mind what these fellows say. They are rough, but their hearts are kind. Come with me and tell me what is wrong." "Everything is wrong," said Allan a Dale miserably, and it was true that things were going very badly with him. For his true love and promised bride had been forced to give him up and promise her hand to a rich old knight who won her father's favor by means of his money. "She will marry the old knight if her father bids her," cried Allan a Dale, "for she thinks it right to be an obedient daughter, but I know it will break her heart and she will die." "Now this thing shall not be," cried Little John, starting forward. "Master, can we not prevent such a wrong?" "We will see," answered Robin Hood, "but she is to be married in 2 days. Then we will go to the church and see that she is married to you instead of the old knight, but we will need to find a priest who will marry you." "Then I know the very priest," said Will Scarlet. "It is jolly Friar Tuck, who lives in Fountain Dale." "Then let us go and get him at once. We have no time to lose," said Robin Hood, and out they started without delay. Little John, Will Scarlet, young David of Doncaster, and Arthur a Bland went with him. They wore their best clothes. "For," said Robin Hood, "we must look brave when we go to a wedding." After they had walked a whole morning, they came to the bend in the river beyond which Friar Tuck dwelt. But his cell was across the river, and to get to it they would have to wade through. "Well," said Robin Hood, "had I known I would have to wade the river, I would not have put on my best clothes." Then he left his men, bidding them listen if his bugle should sound, and went on alone. As soon as he was out of sight of them, he thought he heard voices. There seemed to be two men talking on the riverbank below, but the voices were wondrously alike. Robin Hood slipped to the edge and looked over. With his broad back against a willow tree, sat a stout, brawny fellow in the robe of a friar, but no other man was by. He held a great pie in his lap, made of tender, juicy meats, compounded with young onions and other toothsome vegetables, which he munched at sturdily. As he ate, he talked, and listening to him, Robin Hood almost died of laughing, for the merry friar was pretending to be two people. He would offer a piece of the pasty first to his right hand, and then to his left with much politeness, and go through the same actions with a bottle of drink that he had. Robin looked and listened till the pie was all gone and the bottle empty. Then the monk began to urge his imaginary companion to sing. "Now, sweet lad," he said to himself, "canst thou not tune me a song?" And then he answered himself bashfully, "La, I know not, I am but an ill voice this day. Prithee, ask me not, dost thou not hear how I croak like a frog?" Then he spoke again as the first one. "Nay, nay, thy voice is as sweet as any bullfinch. Come sing, prithee. I would rather hear thee sing than eat a fair feast." And so it went on till he began singing, and that was as two persons, too. The song he sang was a duet between a youth and a maid, and he sung the maiden's part very high and squeaky, and the youth's very deep and gruff. It was the funniest thing you can imagine, and when the last chorus was reached, Robin Hood could hold in no more, but joined in with the singing lustily. Then the friar leaped forth, crying, "What spy have we here?" And from beneath his monk's robe he drew forth a sword as heavy and stout as any that Robin Hood's band carried. "Put up thy sword, friend," called Robin. "Folks that have sung together should not fight." And then he leaped down beside the friar. "Do you know the country round about, good and holy man?" he asked. "Yes, somewhat," answered the friar cautiously. "And do you know a spot called Fountain Dale, and a certain monk who is called the Curtal Friar of Fountain Abbey?" "Yes, somewhat." "Is it across the river?" asked Robin Hood. "Yes," answered the monk. "Do you know whether this friar is now on the other side of the river or on this side?" asked Robin. "That," answered the friar very deliberately, "is something you will have to find out for yourself." This angered Robin, and indeed it was not at all civil. "Well," he said, "if I must cross the river, I must ask you to carry me across, for you can see that my clothes are such as the water would injure." At first the friar was angry at the request, but soon a different thought seemed to come to him, and he laughed. "Well," he said, "if the holy Saint Christopher carried pilgrims across the river, perhaps I ought to do so also. Give me your sword that it may not get wet, and I will carry you." So he tucked his own sword and Robin's under his arm, bent his back for Robin to get on it, and waded across the water. He put Robin down very gently on the other bank, but he did not give him back his sword. "Thanks, good father," said Robin. "Give me my sword, and I will away." "Nay, good youth," answered the friar, pointing the sword at Robin. "You see, I got wet crossing the river. It is necessary for me to cross again, but I fear, if I got wet once more, I might get a crick in my back. That would hinder my prayers. I pray thee, carry me back." He had the sword, and there was nothing for Robin to do but to obey. So he carried the friar back, and it was harder than for the friar to carry him. But while they were in the stream, he managed to loosen friar tuck's sword belt so that when they got to land, he snatched it off. Now Robin Hood had the two swords. "Now carry me across again," he said. "It is a long story, but the end of it is that friar tuck carried Robin Hood halfway across the river, and there dumped him into the water to cool off, as he said." Then Robin fought with him, but though they fought together with might and main for hours, neither could overcome the other. And so they ceased to fight and became friends, and Friar Tuck willingly consented to go with him and perform the marriage between Allan a Dale and his fair Ellen, no matter what a pother it raised. So now Robin Hood and a score of his merry men set out to the wedding, which was to be held in Emmet Church. Robin Hood was dressed as a strolling minstrel, and across his shoulders he had slung a harp, leaving the most of his followers in hiding a little distance from the church. He went in boldly. It was to be a very grand wedding, and the Bishop of Hereford himself was to perform the ceremony. He came with a long train of followers, and as he entered, he saw Robin with his harp beside the door. "Now, who are you?" he asked, well pleased, for everybody loved to see a minstrel. "I am a harper from the north country," answered Robin Hood. "I can play such music as never another in all England can do, for there is magic in my harping, and if I play at this wedding, it will ensure that the fair bride shall love the man she marries with her whole heart all her life long." "Marry then, let him play," said Sir Stephen, the old bridegroom. He knew that it was her father's will, instead of her own wish, that made the fair Ellen marry him, but he did not know that she loved another, for her father had concealed it from him. And now the bride's father brought in the bride, and she was the most beautiful maiden they had ever seen. But she was pale and wan, and she drooped on her father's arm like a broken lily. "How is this?" cried Robin Hood. "A bride should be like a blushing rose. Maiden, is it of your own free will that you wed with this knight?" "No, no," sobbed fair Ellen. "I wish to wed no one but my own true love, Allan a Dale the minstrel." "Then Allan a Dale ye shall wed," cried Robin Hood, and set his bugle to his lips and blew. The followers, who had entered the church and Friar Tuck, came running down the aisles and gathered around him. Then came a scene of confusion. The Bishop of Hereford, the Prior of Emmet, and all his train commanded the people to seize Robin Hood, but they would not do it. The old knight who was the bridegroom sought to draw his sword, but he wore no sword on his wedding day. "At them and slay them," he cried to his men-at-arms. But just at that minute there came running up, at double quick, the rest of Robin Hood's men, with swords drawn and bows and arrows hanging at their backs. "I will depart," said the bridegroom to the bride's father. "I would not marry your daughter now for all the kingdom of England." He spoke angrily, for he felt that he had been cheated, not knowing that the maiden loved someone else. The Prior of Emmet, calling his train, also departed, in high displeasure, and the Bishop of Hereford would have gone too, but Robin bade him stay. "Now," he said, "we will have a wedding, and fair Ellen shall marry Allan a Dale." "Ye cannot." The Prior of Emmet turned back to say this. "You have no priest to marry them." "Am I not a priest?" bellowed Friar Tuck so fiercely that the prior shook in his pointed shoes and made haste to get away. "But the bans have not been published," said the bride's father. "I will publish them," roared Friar Tuck, and the old song says that he cried them three times the number required by law, and then, lest that should not be enough, he cried them six times more. "But I cannot be married without my father's blessing," sobbed Ellen, for she was ever an obedient daughter. "There, there, don't cry," said Robin Hood gently. "I will get your father's blessing." Then he called to Will Stutely. "Give me the two bags of gold I bade you bring." He strode up to Ellen's father with a bag of gold in each hand. "Here are 200 golden angels," he said. "If you give your daughter your blessing on this her wedding day, I will give you these as her dower. If you give her not the blessing, she shall be married, just the same, but not a cracked farthing shalt thou have." The father looked at the gold and then at Robin Hood. He knew the knight was gone and would not come back. "Well," he said, but not happily, "I will give her my blessing." So the wedding went on, and after it was over they went to Sherwood Forest and held the merriest feast that ever was held in that merry place. And Allan a Dale and his bride lived happy all the rest of their lives, and he sang such beautiful songs that his fame went all over England. As for Friar Tuck, he liked Robin Hood and his band so much that he never went back to Fountain Dale, but became one of Robin Hood's merry men, Robin Hood and the Sorrowful Knight. "We have had no guests for a long time," said Robin Hood one day. "Let us go out and look for some. Little John, you go to the east, and I will go to the west, and we will see if we do not find passing a greedy noble or fat churchman who carries too much of this world's goods with him and needs to be relieved for the good of the poor." Now when Robin Hood and his men robbed a man, and they never molested any but the rich who had made their wealth by grinding down the poor, they brought him into the forest and made a feast for him. Then, after he had feasted, they told him he must pay his reckoning, and they took his goods or gold that he carried and divided these into three piles. One third they gave back to him, one third they kept for themselves, and the other third they distributed to the poor. The rich and grasping shuddered at the very mention of Robin Hood's feasts, but the poor breathed blessings on his name whenever they thought of them. So Little John and his part of the band went to the east, and they were lucky, for they brought in the rich Bishop of Hereford with five sumpter mules loaded with goods, but Robin Hood and his half found only a sorrowful knight who sighed as he rode along and seemed too sad to notice anything. Robin Hood laid his hand on his bridle, stopping his horse. "Hold," he said, "I would speak with you." "Now who are you who would stop a peaceful traveler on the king's highway?" asked the knight. "Some call me an honest man and some call me a robber," answered Robin Hood. "At any rate, I and my men have an inn in the forest where we want you to stop and feast, but we let you know that we count upon our guests paying their reckoning." "I take your meaning," answered the knight, "but I am no guest for you, for I have no money. Indeed, I am in great sorrow by reason of this very thing, having great need of money to save the life of my son. I mortgaged my estate to the Prior of Emmet, and though I could raise the money if you would give me more time, he will not give me a day, but means to seize the estate and turn me out a beggar." "How much money did you borrow of him?" asked Robin Hood. "Only 400 pounds. The estate is worth many times that, but he will show no mercy." "Have you no friends who could lend you the money?" asked Robin Hood. Alas, no, answered the knight. When I was fortunate, I had many friends who crowded around me, but now that I have come to trouble, they have all deserted me. Well, the men who are in trouble always have friends in Sherwood Forest, answered Robin Hood. Come with me as a free guest, and we will find a way to help you. So they went on until they came to the great tree, where Friar Tuck and half a dozen others were preparing the feast around a huge fire. And there in the light of the flames sat the Bishop of Hereford under guard with his sumpter mules with their loaded packs, tied to the trees around. Have mercy, he whined, but Robin Hood answered sternly. What mercy have you ever shown to the poor men? Open his packs. So they opened the packs, which were full of rich goods, and divided them into three parts. Beside the packs of goods, there was a box that held 1,500 pounds in gold. Robin Hood took up the portion, divided out for the poor, and gave it to the sorrowful knight. Since the churchmen have despoiled you, the churchmen shall help you, he said. Oh, I thank you, cried the knight, his sorrowful face lighting up for the first time that day. But I will not take it as a gift, but as a loan. I will pay it back to the bishop or to you. The bishop nodded and opened his mouth to say, that is well, but Robin Hood interrupted him shortly. Pay it to me, he said. I will help the poor with it. The bishop would but crowd it into his own coffers and use it to gain more money. So the knight who had been so sorrowful departed, with all his troubles cleared away. Sorely disappointed was the prior of Emmet, for he had made sure by cheating and craft that the poor knight who had fallen into his clutches could not get the money to redeem his lands anywhere, and he counted them already in his grasp, but he had to give them up, and that is a story too, but we have not room to tell it here, Robin Hood and the king. I wish I could see Robin Hood, said King Richard. I wish I could see him and his men shoot and wrestle, and go through all the feats in which they have such wondrous skill. But if they heard that the king was coming, they would think it was only to arrest them, and they would flee deep into the forest, and I should never get a glimpse of them. King Richard spoke kindly, for he was a king who loved all manly sports and those who excelled in them. I would give 100 pounds to see Robin Hood and his men in the greenwood, he said. I'll tell you how you can see him without a doubt, spoke up one of the king's trusty companions with a laugh. Put on the robes of a fat abbot and ride through Sherwood Forest with the 100 pounds in your pouch, and you will be sure to see him and be feasted by him. I'll do it, cried bluff King Richard, slapping his knee. It will be a huge joke. So he and seven of his followers dressed themselves as an abbot and seven black friars and rode out along the highway toward Sherwood Forest, and Robin Hood and his men took them and brought them to the Trystal Tree, and there they searched them and took the pouch of gold. But they gave half the gold back to the king, for it was not their custom to leave any man in need. They were pleased with these travelers because they did not resist nor rail at them. Now we shall give you a feast that will be worth 50 pounds, said Robin Hood. I have a good appetite for a feast, said the pretended abbot, but even more do I desire to see the archery and wrestling and play with the quarterstaff and all those things in which I am told you excel. You shall see the very best we can do, answered Robin Hood. But I pray you, holy father, lay aside your cowl that you may enjoy this sweet evening air. No, answered the mock abbot. It may not be, for I and my brothers have vowed not to let our faces be seen during this journey. Very well then, said Robin Hood, I interfere with no man's vows. And he never dreamed that it was the king. They gave them a splendid feast of roasted venison, and pheasant and fish and wild fowls, all done to a turn over the roaring fire and the best of drink. Then they arranged the sports. The target was a garland of leaves and flowers that was hung 60 paces distant upon a stake. It was a mark that only the best of archers could hit at all. Now shoot, Robin Hood. You shall each of you have 3 shots, and everyone who fails to place his arrows within the garland shall forfeit the arrow and receive beside a box on the side of the head, as stout as can be given. Can anyone hit inside that little garland at such a distance? Asked the king in amaze. Look and see, answered Robin Hood proudly. First, David of Doncaster shot and lodged all 3 arrows within the garland, while the king looked on, astonished. Then Midge, the miller's son, and he also placed all his arrows inside of the garland. Then Wat, the tinker, drew his bow, but he was unlucky, for one of his arrows missed the mark by the breadth of 2 fingers. Come here and take your punishment, called Robin Hood. The king supposed that since he had missed by so little, he would receive but a light tap, but he got a blow that knocked him spinning across the grass, heels overhead. Ha ha ha, laughed his comrades, and oh ho, thought King Richard, I am glad I am not in this. But he was much impressed with the way Robin Hood's men obeyed him. They are better to follow his commands than my servants are to follow mine, he thought. The shooting went on, and most of the men shot their arrows within the garland, but a few missed and received tremendous buffets. Last Robin Hood shot. His first shaft split off a piece of the stake on which the garland was hung. His second lodged a scant inch from the first, but the last arrow he shot was feathered faultily, and it swerved to one side and smote an inch outside of the garland. Then all the company roared with good-natured laughter, for it was seldom indeed that they saw their master miss. "Go and take your punishment, master," said Midge, the miller's son. "I hope it will be as heavy as Watts." "Well," said Robin Hood, "I will forfeit my arrow to our guest and take my buffet from him." Now the merry Robin was somewhat crafty in this, for though he did not mind hard knocks at all, he did not like the thought of being sent sprawling before his band. The hands of churchmen were soft, and their strongest blows but feeble, for they did not work nor use their muscles much. But the pretended abbot bared an arm so stout and muscular that it made the yeoman stare. Robin Hood placed himself fairly in front of him, and he struck a blow that would have felled an ox. Down went Robin Hood on the ground, rolling over and over, and his men fairly shouted with laughter. "Well," said Robin Hood, sitting up half dazed, "I did not think that there was an arm in England that could strike such a blow. Who are you, man? I'll warrant you are no churchman as you seem." Then Richard threw his cowl, and Robin knew his king. If he had been a disloyal man as well as an outlaw, he would have trembled then. But though he knelt at the king's feet and signaled all his men to kneel, his voice was not ashamed. "Your Majesty," he said, "you have no subjects in all England more loyal to you than I and my merry men. We have done no evil except to certain of the greedy and rich who oppressed your subjects. We crave your pardon if we have done wrong, and we beg for your protection and swear that we will ever serve you faithfully." Then the king looked down in amazement that an outlaw should speak so, but he knew men, and he knew what people said of Robin Hood. And he knew, too, that he was the best archer in all England, and he wanted him in his own train. "I will forgive all your law-breaking," he said, "if you will come with me to my court and serve me there. You shall take Little John and Will Scarlet and Allan a Dale, who is the sweetest singer I ever heard, and the rest of your men I will make into Royal Rangers, since I judge that they can protect Sherwood Forest better than any others." So Robin Hood left the greenwood and went to the king's court, and he served King Richard well. But he did not like the confinement of the court and could not abide the gaieties and jealousies of the courtiers. After King Richard died, his brother John took the throne, and he was one of the worst kings that ever ruled England. Then Robin Hood went back to the forest, and his merry men gathered around him once more, and again they became outlaws. And there in the forest he lived till he died. Death of Robin Hood. Now the manner of Robin Hood's death was in this wise. He had grown to be an old man, and he became ill of a fever. "I will go to my cousin, the prioress of Kirklees, for she hath much knowledge of healing," he said. "I will ask her to bleed me that I may become well." In those days the women had more knowledge of healing than any others, for it was the duty of every mother and daughter to learn as much as she could about it, that she might know what to do if her husband or her son were wounded. This cousin of Robin Hood's was greatly indebted to him, for he had got her good place as prioress. But she loved one of his enemies, and she dealt treacherously with him. She opened a vein in his arm, but she did not close it up again. Then she left him alone in a high room at the very top of the priory to bleed to death. All day long he bled till he was so weak that he could hardly move. But at evening he managed to lift his bugle to his lips and blow. The blast was but feeble, but Little John heard it, for though the prioress refused to let him in with Robin Hood, he had lingered as close to his dear master as he could get all day long. The prioress locked the great entry door so that he might not come in, and he seized a huge stone mortar that three men could not lift ordinarily and hurled it against the door, crashing it in. Then he dashed up the winding stairs, and none could stay him until he reached the room under the eaves where his master lay. But he saw at a glance that Robin Hood was dying. "Master," he cried, "I will burn the priory down over the heads of these vile nuns whose mistress has done you such dreadful treachery." "No, no," said Robin Hood with a smile that was feeble but was wondrous sweet. "I have never hurt a woman in my life nor allowed my followers to do it. I could not allow such a thing now." And with almost his last breath he made Little John promise to do no injury to the treacherous nun who had killed him. There are many more stories about Robin Hood. There is not space enough here to put down half of them. I hope you will ask for them at the library and read them all, and some of the quaint old ballads about him too. And I hope, most of all, that every boy who reads them will try to be as kindly and as helpful and as generous and as brave and chivalrous to all womankind as Robin Hood was, Robin Hood and Allan a Dale. Come listen to me, you gallant so free, all you that love Mirthford to hear, and I will tell you of a bold outlaw that lived in Nottinghamshire as Robin Hood in the forest stood, all under the greenwood tree. There he was aware of a brave young man, as fine might be. The youngster was clad in scarlet red. In scarlet fine and gay, and he did frisk it over the plain, and chaunted a roundelay, as Robin Hood next morning stood, amongst the leaves so gay. There did he espy the same young man. Come drooping along the way, the scarlet he wore the day before, it was clean cast away, and at every step he fetched a sigh. Alas, and a well-a-day, then stepped forth brave Little John, and Midge the miller's son, which made the young man bend his bow when he saw them come. "Stand off, stand off," the young man said. "What is your will with me?" "You must come before our master straight, under yon greenwood tree." And when he came bold Robin before, Robin asked him courteously, "Oh, hast thou any money to spare, for my merry men and me?" "I have no money," the young man said, "but 5 shillings and a ring, and that I have kept this 7 long years, to have at my wedding. Yesterday I should have married a maid, but she was from me tan, and chosen to be an old knight's delight, whereby my poor heart is slain." "What is thy name?" then said Robin Hood. "Come tell me, without any fail." "By the faith of my body," then said the young man, "my name it is Allan a Dale." "What wilt thou give me?" said Robin Hood, "in ready gold or fee, to help thee to thy true love again, and deliver her unto thee?" "I have no money," then quoth the young man, "in ready gold nor fee, but I will swear upon a book thy true servant for to be." "How many miles is it to thy true love? Come tell me without guile." "By the faith of my body," then said the young man, "it is but 5 little mile." Then Robin he hasted over the plain, he did neither stint nor lin, until he came unto the church, where Allan should keep his wedding. "What dost thou here?" the bishop then said. "I prithee now tell unto me." "I am a bold harper," quoth Robin Hood, "and the best in the north country." "Oh, welcome, oh, welcome," the bishop he said, "that music best pleaseth me." "You shall have no music," said Robin Hood, "till the bride and bridegroom I see." With that came in a wealthy knight, which was both grave and old, and after him a finikin lass did shine like the glistering gold. "This is not a fit match," quoth Robin Hood, "that you do seem to make here, for since we are come into the church, the bride shall choose her own dear." Then Robin Hood put his horn to his mouth, and blew blasts 2 or 3, when 24 yeomen bold came leaping over the lay, and when they came into the churchyard, marching all in a row, the first man was Allan a Dale, to give bold Robin his bow. "This is thy true love, Robin," he said. "Young Allan, as I hear say, and you shall be married this same time, before we depart away." "That shall not be," the bishop cried, "for thy word shall not stand, they shall be 3 times asked in the church, as the law is of our land." Robin Hood pulled off the bishop's coat and put it upon Little John. "By the faith of my body," then Robin said, "this cloth doth make thee a man." When Little John went into the choir, the people began to laugh, he asked them 7 times into church, lest 3 times should not be enough. "Who gives me this maid?" said Little John. Quoth Robin Hood, "That do I, and he that takes her from Allan a Dale, full dearly he shall buy." And then having ended this merry wedding, the bride looked like a queen, and so they returned to the merry greenwood, amongst the leaves so green. Author unknown, instructor literature series, 5C, supplementary readers and classics for all grades, 5C, a series of little books containing material needed for supplementary reading and study, classified and graded, large type for lower grades. This list is constantly being added to. If a substantial number of books are to be ordered, or if other titles than those shown here are desired, send for latest list, first grade Fables and Myths, *6 Fairy Stories of the Moon, 27-11 Fables from Aesop, *23 More Fables from Aesop, 29 Indian Myths, Bush, 140 Nursery Tales, Taylor, 288 Primer from Fableland, Maguire Nature, *1 Little Plant People Part I, *2 Little Plant People Part II, *30 Story of a Sunbeam, Miller, *31 Kitty Mittens and Her Friends, History, *32 Patriotic Stories, Story of the Flag, Story of Washington, etc., Literature, 104 Mother Goose Reader, 228 First Term Primer, Maguire, 230 Rhyme and Jingle Reader for Beginners, Second Grade, Fables and Myths, *33 Stories from Anderson, Taylor, *34 Stories from Grimm, Taylor, *36 Little Red Riding Hood, Reiter, *37 Jack and the Beanstalk, Reiter, *38 Adventures of a Brownie, Nature and Industry, *3 Little Workers, Animal Stories, *39 Little Wood Friends, Maine, *40 Wings and Stings, Halifax, *41 Story of Wool, Maine, *42 Bird Stories from the Poets, History and Biography, *43 Story of the Mayflower, McCabe, asterisk 45, Boyhood of Washington, Reiter, asterisk 204, Boyhood of Lincoln, Reiter, Literature, asterisk 72, Bow Wow and Mew Mew, Craik, 142, Child's Garden of Verses, Stevenson. 206, Picture Study Stories for Little Children, 220, Story of the Christ Child, 262, Four Little Cottontails, Smith, 268, Four Little Cottontails in Winter, Smith, 269, Four Little Cottontails at Play, Smith, 274, Little Cottontails in Vacation, Smith, 290, Fuzz in Japan, A Child Life Reader, Third Grade, Fables and Myths, 46, Puss in Boots and Cinderella, 47, Greek Myths, Clingan Smith, asterisk 48, Nature Myths, Metcalf, 50, Reynard the Fox, Best, 102, Thumbelina and Dream Stories, asterisk 146, Sleeping Beauty and Other Stories, 174, Sun Myths, Reiter, 175, Norse Legends, I, Reiter, 176, Norse Legends, Roman II, Reiter, 177, Legends of the Rhineland, McCabe, asterisk 282, Siegfried, the Lorelei and Other Rhine Legends, McCabe, Nature and Industry, 49, Buds, Stems and Fruits, Maine, asterisk 51, Story of Flax, Maine, asterisk 52, Story of Glass, Hansen, asterisk 53, Adventures of a Little Water Drop, Maine, asterisk 133, Aunt Martha's Corner Cupboard, Part I, Story of Tea and the Teacup, asterisk 135, Little People of the Hills, Dry Air and Dry Soil Plants, Chase, asterisk 137, Aunt Martha's Corner Cupboard, Part II, Story of Sugar, Coffee and Salt, 138, Aunt Martha's Corner Cupboard, Part II, Story of Rice, Currants and Honey, asterisk 203, Little Plant People of the Waterways, Chase, History and Biography, asterisk 4, Story of Washington, Reiter, asterisk 7, Story of Longfellow, McCabe, asterisk 21, Story of the Pilgrims, Powers, asterisk 44, Famous Early Americans, Smith, Standish, Penn, Bush, asterisk 54, Story of Columbus, McCabe, 55, Story of Whittier, McCabe, 57, Story of Louisa M. Alcott, Bush, asterisk 59, Story of the Boston Tea Party, McCabe, asterisk 60, Children of the Northland, Bush, asterisk 62, Children of the Southlands, I, Florida, Cuba, Puerto Rico, asterisk 63, Children of the Southlands, II, Africa, Hawaii, the Philippines, McPhee, 64, Child Life in the Colonies, I, New Amsterdam, Baker, 65, Child Life in the Colonies, II, Pennsylvania, Baker, 66, Child Life in the Colonies, II, Virginia, asterisk 68, Stories of the Revolution, I, Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys, McCabe, asterisk 69, Stories of the Revolution, II, Around Philadelphia, McCabe, asterisk 70, Stories of the Revolution, II, Marion the Swamp Fox, McCabe, 132, Story of Franklin, Farris, asterisk 164, The Little Brown Baby and Other Babies, asterisk 165, Jamila, The Child of the Desert and Some of Her Sisters, 166, Louise on the Rhine and in Her New Home, Nas. 161, 163, 166 are the stories from Seven Little Sisters by Jane Andrews. 167, Famous Artists, I, Landseer and Ben-Hur Literature, 35, Goody Two Shoes. 58, Selections from Alice and Phoebe Carey, asterisk 67, The Story of Robinson Crusoe, asterisk 71, Selections from Hiawatha, 5 Grades. 227 are Animal Friends and How to Treat Them. 233 Poems Worth Knowing, Book I Primary, 4th Grade, Nature and Industry, asterisk 75, Story of Coal, McCain, asterisk 76, Story of Wheat, Halifax, 77, Story of Cotton, Brown, 134 Conquests of Little Plant People, 136 Peeps into Bird Nooks, I, McPhee, asterisk 181, Stories of the Stars, McPhee, 205 Eyes and No Eyes and the Three Giants, History and Biography, asterisk 5, Story of Lincoln, Reiter, 56, Indian Children Tales, Bush, asterisk 78, Stories of the Backwoods, asterisk 79, A Little New England Viking, Baker, 81, Story of DeSoto, Hatfield, 82, Story of Daniel Boone, Reiter, asterisk 83, Story of Printing, McCabe, asterisk 84, Story of David Crockett, Reiter, 85, Story of Patrick Henry, asterisk 86, American Inventors, I, Whitney and Fulton, Farris, 87, American Inventors, II, Morse and Edison, Farris, 88, American Naval Heroes, Jones, Perry, Farragut, Bush, 89, Fremont and Kit Carson, Judd, asterisk 91 story of Eugene Field. McCabe, asterisk 178 story of Lexington and Bunker Hill. Baker, asterisk 182 story of Joan of Arc. McPhee. 207 famous artists. II Reynolds and Murillo. Asterisk 213 famous artists. II Millet. Asterisk 248 makers of European history. Literature, asterisk 9015 selections from Longfellow, Village Blacksmith, Children's Hour, and others, 95 Japanese myths and legends, 103 stories from the Old Testament. Asterisk 111 Water Babies, abridged, asterisk 159 Little Lame Prince Cond. Mulock, asterisk 171 Ptolemy of the Treetops, Grimes, 172 Labu the Little Lake Dweller, Grimes, 173 Tara of the Tents, Grimes, asterisk 195 Night Before Christmas and Other Christmas Poems and Stories, Any Grade, asterisk 201 Alice's First Adventures in Wonderland, 202 Alice's Further Adventures in Wonderland, Carol, asterisk 258 Rollo the Cave Boy, Grimes, 257 Quasa the Cliff Dweller, Grimes, 5th Grade Nature and Industry, 92 Animal Life in the Sea, McPhee, asterisk 93 Story of Silk, Brown, asterisk 94 Story of Sugar, Reiter, 96 What We Drink Tea, Coffee, and Cocoa, 139 Peeps into Bird Nooks, II. 210 Snowdrops and Crocuses, 263 The Sky Family, Denton, asterisk 280 Making of the World, Herndon, asterisk 281 Builders of the World, Herndon, asterisk 283 Stories of Time, Bush, History and Biography, asterisk 16 Explorations of the Northwest, 80 Story of the Cabots, McBride, asterisk 97 Story of the Norsemen, Hansen, 98 Story of Nathan Hale, McCabe, 99 Story of Jefferson, McCabe, 100 Story of Bryant, McPhee, 101 Story of Robert E. Lee, McCain, 105 Story of Canada, McCabe, asterisk 106 Story of Mexico, McCabe, asterisk 107 Story of Robert Louis Stevenson, 110 Story of Hawthorne, McPhee, 112 Biographical Stories, Hawthorne, 141 Story of Grant, McCain, asterisk 144 Story of Steam, McCabe, 145 Story of McKinley, McBride, 157 Story of Dickens, Smith, asterisk 179 Story of the Flag, Baker, 185 Story of the First Crusade, 190 Story of Father Hennepin, 191 Story of La Salle, McBride, asterisk 217 Story of Florence Nightingale, 28 Story of Peter Cooper, McPhee, 219 Little Stories of Discovery, Halsey, 232 Story of Shakespeare, Grahams, 265 Four Little Discoverers in Panama, Bush, 287 Life in Colonial Days, Tillinghast, Literature, asterisk 8 King of the Golden River, Ruskin, asterisk 9 The Golden Touch, Hawthorne, asterisk 61 Story of Sinbad the Sailor, asterisk 108 History in Verse, Sheridan's Ride, Independence Bell, The Blue and the Gray, etc., 113 Little Daffodoundley and Other Stories, Hawthorne, asterisk 180 Story of Aladdin and of Ali Baba, asterisk 183 A Dog of Flanders, De La Ramy, asterisk 180 For the Nuremberg Stove, La Ramy, asterisk 186 Heroes from King Arthur, Graves, 194 Whittier's Poems, selected, asterisk 199 Jackanapes, Ewing, asterisk 200 The Child of Urbino, La Ramy, 208 Heroes of Asgard selections, Kiri, asterisk 212 Stories from Robin Hood, Bush, 234 Poems Worth Knowing, Book II Intermediate, Faxon, 255 Chinese Fables and Stories, 277 At the Back of the North Wind, selection from MacDonald, 6th Grade, Nature and Industry, 109 Gifts of the Forests, Rubber, Cinchona, Resins, etc., McPhee, 249 Flowers and Birds of Illinois, Patterson, Agricultural, asterisk 271 Animal Husbandry, Horses and Cattle, 272 Animal Husbandry, Sheep and Swine, Geography, asterisk 114 Great European Cities, I London and Paris, Bush, 115 Great European Cities, II Rome and Berlin, Bush, asterisk 168 Great European Cities, III St. Petersburg and Constantinople, Bush, 246 What I Saw in Japan, Griffey's, 247 The Chinese and Their Country, 285 Story of Panama and the Canal, Nita, History and Biography, 73.4 Great Musicians. Bush, 74.4 More Great Musicians. Asterisk 116 Old English Heroes, Alfred, Richard the Lionhearted, the Black Prince. Bush, 117 Later English Heroes, Cromwell, Wellington, Gladstone. Bush, 160 Heroes of the Revolution, asterisk 163 Stories of Courage. Bush, 187 Lives of Webster and Clay, asterisk 188 Story of Napoleon. Bush, asterisk 189 Stories of Heroism. Bush, 197 Story of Lafayette. Bush, 198 Story of Roger Williams. Leighton, 209 Lewis and Clark Expedition, asterisk 224 Story of William Tell. Halleck, 253 Story of the Aeroplane. Galbraith, asterisk 266 Story of Belgium. Griffies, 267 Story of Wheels. Bush, 286 Story of Slavery. Booker T. Washington, Stories of the States. 508 Story of Florida, Boskett. 509 Story of Georgia, Derry. 511 Story of Illinois, Smith. 512 Story of Indiana, Clem. 513 Story of Iowa, McPhee. 515 Story of Kentucky, Eubank. 520 Story of Michigan, Skinner. 521 Story of Minnesota, Skinner. 523 Story of Missouri, Pierce. 525 Story of Nebraska, Mears. 528 Story of New Jersey, Hutchinson. 533 Story of Ohio, Galbraith, asterisk 536 Story of Pennsylvania, March. 540 Story of Tennessee, Overall. 542 Story of Utah, Young. 546 Story of West Virginia, Shockey. 547 Story of Wisconsin, Skinner. Literature, asterisk 10 The Snow Image, Hawthorne. 11 Rip Van Winkle, Irving. Asterisk 12 Legend of Sleepy Hollow, Irving. Asterisk 22 Rab and His Friends, Brown. 243 Golden Apples, Hawthorne. Asterisk 25 The Miraculous Pitcher, Hawthorne. Asterisk 26 The Minotaur, Hawthorne. 118 A Tale of the White Hills and Other Stories, Hawthorne. 119 Bryant's Thanatopsis and Other Poems. Asterisk 120 10 Selections from Longfellow, Paul Revere's Ride, The Skeleton in Armor and Other Poems. 121 Selections from Holmes, The Wonderful One Hoss Shay, Old Ironsides, and Others, asterisk 122 The Pied Piper of Hamelin, 161 The Great Carbuncle, Mr. Higginbotham's Catastrophe, Snowflakes, Hawthorne, 162 The Pygmies, Hawthorne, asterisk 211 The Golden Fleece, Hawthorne, asterisk 222 Kingsley's Greek Heroes, Part I The Story of Perseus, asterisk 223 Kingsley's Greek Heroes, Part II The Story of Theseus, 225 Tennyson's Poems, selected for various grades, 229 Responsive Bible Readings, Zeller, 264 The Story of Don Quixote, Bush, 250 Thrift Stories, Benj, Franklin and Others, 278 A Child's Dream of a Star and Other Stories, 284 Story of Little Nell, Dickens, 7th Grade Literature, asterisk 13 Courtship of Miles Standish, asterisk 14 Evangeline, Longfellow, asterisk 15 Snowbound, Whittier, asterisk 20 The Great Stone Face, Rill from the Town Pump, Hawthorne, 123 Selections from Wordsworth, Ode on Immortality, We Are Seven, To the Cuckoo, and Other Poems, 124 Selections from Shelley and Keats, 125 Selections from The Merchant of Venice, asterisk 147 Story of King Arthur, As Told by Tennyson, Halleck, 149 Man Without a Country, The Hail, asterisk 192 Story of Jean Valjean, Grahams, asterisk 193 Selections from The Sketchbook, Irving, 196 The Grey Champion, Hawthorne, 213 Poems of Thomas Moore, selected, 214 more selections from The Sketchbook, Irving, 216 Lamb's Tales from Shakespeare, selected, asterisk 231 The Oregon Trail, condensed from Parkman, Grahams, 235 Poems Worth Knowing, Book III Grammar, Faxon, 238 Lamb's Adventures of Ulysses, Part I, asterisk 239 Lamb's Adventures of Ulysses, Part II, asterisk 241 Story of the Iliad, Church, Cond, 242 Story of the Aeneid, Church, Cond, asterisk 251 Story of Language and Literature, Heilig, 252 The Battle of Waterloo, Hugo, 254 Story of the Talisman, Scott, Weeks, asterisk 259 The Last of the Mohicans, abridged, 261 Selected Tales of a Wayside in Longfellow. Asterisk 260 Oliver Twist, abridged. Dickens, Nature. 226 Mars and Its Mysteries, Wilson. 279 True Story of the Man and the Moon, Wilson, 8th grade. Literature, asterisk 17 Enoch Arden, Tennyson. Asterisk 18 Vision of Sir Launfal, Lowell. Asterisk 19 Cotter's Saturday Night, Burns. Asterisk 23 The Deserted Village, Goldsmith. Asterisk 126 Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Asterisk 127 Gray's Elegy and Other Poems. Asterisk 128 Speeches of Lincoln. 129 Julius Caesar Selections. 130 Henry the VIII Selections. 131 Macbeth Selections. Asterisk 140 2 Scots Lady of the Lake, Canto I. 154 Scots Lady of the Lake, Canto II. 143 Building of the Ship and Other Poems, Longfellow. 148 Horatius, Ivry the Armada, Macaulay. 150 Bunker Hill Address and Selections from Adams and Jefferson Oration, Webster. Asterisk 151 Gold Bug, the Poe. 153 Prisoner of Chillon and Other Poems, Byron. 155 Rochus and Other Poems, Lowell. 156 Edgar Allan Poe, Biography and Selected Poems, Link. Asterisk 158 Washington's Farewell Address and Other Papers. 169 Abraham Joseph Ryan, Biography and Selected Poems, Smith. 170 Paul H. Hayne, Biography and Selected Poems, Link. 215 Life of Samuel Johnson, Macaulay. Asterisk 221 Sir Roger de Coverley Papers, Addison. Asterisk 236 Poems Worth Knowing, Book IV, Advanced, Faxon. 237 Lay of the Last Minstrel, Scott. Introduction and Canto I. These have biographical sketch of author with introduction or explanatory notes, price 5 cents each. Postage 1 cent per copy extra. Order by number 12 or more copies sent, prepaid, at 60 cents per dozen or $5 per hundred. Limp cloth binding. The titles indicated by asterisk are supplied also in limp cloth binding, at 10 cents per copy. Excelsior Literature Series. Annotated Classics and Supplementary Readers. 1. Evangeline Biography Introduction Oral and Written Exercises and Notes. 10C3, Courtship of Miles Standish, Longfellow with Introduction and Notes. 10C5, Vision of Sir Launfal, Lowell. Biography, Introduction Notes Outlines. 10C7, Enoch Arden, Tennyson. Biography Introduction Notes Outlines Questions. 10C9, Great Stone Face, Hawthorne. Biography, Introduction Notes Outlines. 10C11, Browning's Poems. Selected Poems with Notes and Outlines for Study. 10C13, Wordsworth's Poems. Selected Poems with Introduction, Notes and Outlines. 10C15, Sohrab and Rustum Arnold. With Introduction, Notes and Outlines. 10C17, The Children's Poet Study of Longfellow's Poetry for Children with Poems. 10C19, A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens, Complete with Notes. 10C21, Cricket on the Hearth, Charles Dickens, Complete with Notes. 10C23, Familiar Legends. McPhee, Old Tales Retold for Young People. 10C25, Some Water Birds. McPhee, Description and Stories of 4th to 6th Grades. 10C27, Hiawatha, Introduction and Notes. 15C29, Milton's Minor Poems, Biography, Introduction, Notes, Questions, Critical Comments, and Pronouncing Vocabulary. 10C31, Idols of the King. Coming of Arthur, Gareth and Lynette, Lancelot and Elaine, Passing of Arthur. Biography, Introduction. Notes, Questions, Critical Comments, and Pronouncing Vocabulary. 15C33, Selah's Marner Eliot. Biography, Notes, Questions, Critical Comments, Bibliography, 238 pages. Paper, 20C34, Same in Cloth Binding. 30C35, Lady of the Lake, Scott. Biography, Introduction and Extended Notes, Pronouncing Vocabulary. 15C37, Literature of the Bible. Heilig, 15C59, The Sketchbook. Selected, Irving. Biography. Introduction and Notes. 15C, Transcriber's Notes, Added Table of Contents. Images may be clicked to view larger versions. Moved advertising from inside front cover to end of book. Page 4, added missing close quote after miserable all the time. Page 7, changed walnut to walnut. Page 17, changed the managed to he managed. Page 18, moved punctuation inside quotes for how is this. Page 24, changed Sherwood Forest to Sherwood Forest at top of page. Page 27, added missing quote after better than any others. Page 29, added missing period after obeyed him. Back cover, added missing period after Dickens in Cricket on the Hearth listing, changed familiar legends to familiar legends. End of the project GUT and BRG EBOOK stories of Robin Hood asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM. Concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license, the full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property. Trademark Copyright Agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. See paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below, 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E, unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg. 1E1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work, on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to a work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense to the user, provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to, viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9. E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about Donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy, if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free. Distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1. E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark, electronic works, and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund if you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work, b alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and c any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or federal tax identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website. An official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact. Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.